Hey, y'all, how's it going? All right, well, welcome to the show. I guess it's going to be another short week on the show. Historically, I don't take Labor Day off, but yesterday I felt like it. Hey, government employee parasites, they get to take the day off. I guess probably far less than half of private sector workers actually get Labor Day off. You know, there's work to be done. In fact, if only government employees get the day off for Labor Day, I think every day should be Labor Day. I'm with Lou Rockwell on this. Go ahead and pay them their salaries. No, I know it sucks, but you know what? Just give them each $100,000 a year to go on vacation to Bermuda and just leave us all the hell alone. We could afford that if they were all the hell out of our way. Meh. Anyway. So, I took the day off. Hope you had a good long weekend yourself. But so, today down to business. Grant Smith is going to be on to talk about the CIA and their cover-up of Israeli theft of American weapons-grade uranium from NUMEC. Divert. He's the guy that wrote the book on it. Now he's got brand new CIA documents on it. Grant F. Smith. Getting the work done over there at the Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy. Middle East Policy. IRMEP. IRMEP.org. And then Reza Marashi is going to be on the show from the National Iranian American Council. He's a former State Department weenie. And a big proponent of peace between the United States and Iran. Big proponent of the Iran nuclear deal. So he's going to be on. We're going to talk about politics. And also, I have questions in the email this morning from a guy asking about the Iran nuclear deal that I thought they're pretty good questions. And I'll run them by an expert, Reza Marashi. In fact, I better write that down because I'm going to feel like an idiot later if I forget to ask the email questions. Email questions. All right, so Grant F. Smith, Reza Marashi. Look at my website, scotthorton.org. Sign up for the podcast feeds there. There's the whole show archives and just the interviews if you like that kind of thing. Also, join up the chat room with the guys. Hey, chat room guys, how the hell are you, man? Good to see you. scotthorton.org/chat. scotthorton.org/chat. It's an IRC free node chat room. Hashtag Scott Horton Show if you use an external type application for those things. Hashtag Scott Horton Show. IRC free node thing, whatever exactly that means. And, but you don't have to. You can just use a plain old browser window. Go to scotthorton.org/chat, fake name and a captcha, and you're in there. So, come on in. It's nice to have a chat room there. I try to look at it during the segments, but mostly just during the commercials I catch up. But anyway, yeah, join up. All right, cool. All right, so what other business? Oh, business. Guess what? Derek Sheriff, the guy that hired me to do the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism versus Capitalism, the man who runs listenandthinkaudio.com. No, it's listenandthink.com. Listen and Think Audio is the name of the company. Well, check out this incredible deal. Anyone who donates $200 to this show gets a lifetime subscription. Forever. And in fact, I think he even said you can pass them down to your heirs. He doesn't even care. If you die, it's not even your lifetime. It's the lifetime of Listen and Think Audio. You can pass down your lifetime membership to your grandchildren. $200 to this show, you get a lifetime subscription. Every audiobook Listen and Think Audio has ever done, every audiobook Listen and Think Audio will ever do. And it's just libertarian audiobooks. He's a man on a mission, just like you and me. He's just trying to make this a libertarian planet Earth, that's all. So, if you like libertarianism and you like audiobooks, and you want to help support this show, blam. Check out the details at scotthorton.org/donate. scotthorton.org/donate. Anyone sends in $200 to this show, you get a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think Audio audiobooks. I think that's just rad. All right, cool. More business. Tonight, Jeff Tucker and I do Eye on the Empire at Liberty.me. That'll be at 8 o'clock Eastern time, I think, right? Gotta be. At Liberty.me. We named the show Eye on the Empire after our late dear friend Alan Bock and his column at antiwar.com. It was called Eye on the Empire. Great stuff there, man. I miss that guy. He was great. Anyway, so Jeff Tucker and I, we do Eye on the Empire, and tonight it'll be the news hostility scoreboard. Kind of a homage to George Carlin. He had the hostility scoreboard, so we're gonna update it. And then also, Tucker, you know how Tucker is, man. He's, all updated on the libertarian classics. And so he's gonna talk about Joseph Schumpeter, who I'm sure I'm saying his name wrong, but he's one of these, Austrian economist greats who wrote a whole book about the empire. And Tucker's really excited to tell us all about the great insights of this Austrian school economist from 100 years ago on the empires. So that should be good, man. Check it out, Liberty.me. Join up, Liberty.me. It's $5 a month for a really great libertarian social media platform there, man. I think you'll really dig it. Liberty.me. But you don't have to join up to watch the show tonight, I don't think. So anyway, there you go. That's tonight, Eye on the Empire, with myself and the great Jeff Tucker. All right, gonna talk about the terrorists in a minute here, but now I'm gonna talk about Iran. What time is it? Cool. Perfect. Senator Ron Wyden has come out this morning in favor of the deal. That brings the number of American senators supporting the deal to 41. And that could sort of should be enough to launch a filibuster and prevent the devils or, you know, the Republicans acting as agents of a foreign power from even passing their disapproval resolution, which Obama would be sure to veto, and which they are sure to fall short of the numbers that they would need to override that veto already. But if the Democrats can filibuster it, then it won't even amount to a veto. I think that'd be nice. Either way, it doesn't really matter, I don't guess. But here's the wrinkle in that, though. Is Jim Loeb said the other day on the show. Jim Loeb said the other day on the show that there was at least one senator who had said, well, he would vote against the disapproval resolution, but he will not vote to support a filibuster. And in fact, I called Jim this morning to make sure about that, and he had just arrived at the office, so he wasn't all updated, but he said he couldn't remember who it was off the top of his head, but he believes there were two different senators. So perhaps that number 41 is, we're not at that magic number 41. Maybe it's just 39, and we still need two more Democratic senators in order to filibuster to prevent a Republican disapproval resolution against the Iran deal. You know, I know it's not that interesting, but it's kind of interesting. There's a lot at stake with this deal being implemented, so I know the whip count isn't that interesting, but it's on an important subject matter. And, oh, cool. And there's the music. So I'll be back and tell you more things here in a minute.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each.
Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours, max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. All right, y'all, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton, and it's my show, Scott Horton Show. Yeah, I'm always so conflicted, man, on whether I should be talking about Syria or talking about Iran, you know? Is it the all Syria all the time show or the all Iran all the time show? Wonder. It's kind of the same story. I guess I have to go to Dick Cheney here, and we're going to get back to Iran, so I'll try to be brief. We're going to have a whole interview with Iran here. But Dick Cheney gave his speech at the American Enterprise Institute, fittingly. And I just thought, you know, it's funny and instructive. Now, this quote that Dick Cheney says in the speech here, this deal, the nuclear deal, the JCPOA, this deal gives Tehran the means to launch a nuclear attack on the U.S. homeland, Dick Cheney claimed. Well, that's just stupid. I read the deal with my eyeballs. You could read it, too. And, it doesn't do that. I mean, this is completely stupid. And, sorry if you read my Twitter feed that I'm being redundant, but I think it's something really important. As horrible as liberals are on everything, I mean, it's so frustrating to me, the stupid things that liberals believe. But I think at least I'm still living on the same planet as them. Maybe only on foreign policy stuff, I don't know. It just seems like the conservative movement always is stuck on a talking point that is just the biggest pile of crap. Not that they don't have a million things to criticize the left about. But they rather just live in pretend land where make-believe things are real because it's more fun to believe that way, I guess. So, Obama's not some damned lousy Democrat. Oh, he's a secret agent of the Muslim terrorists from Kenya who came to usurp John McCain's rightful throne. Derp. Idiots. And there's a million of them. How about this deal gives Tehran the means to launch a nuclear attack on the United States of America? Do you believe that? If you believe that, it's because you're stupid and you have evil liars, dicks, right where your brain is supposed to be. Instead, you just let them screw you right in the mind. Right up your belief ass. Oh, yeah, Barack Obama and England and France and Germany, they just sat down and they cut a deal with the Iranians to give them nuclear weapons and the means to deliver them to the United States of America. Because, hey, why not? The Earth's only 6,000 years old. Up is down, black is white, nothing means anything. Hey, if Dick Cheney says so, what are you going to do? Read an encyclopedia for a minute or something? What, are you going to try to discern one fact from another when there's a scary slogan you can believe in? You can cram up your butt? Yeah, tell me another one, dick. Because actually what the deal says is that Iran's going to get rid of virtually all of their stockpile of uranium. They're going to limit its enrichment to 3.6%, measly 3.6% industrial grade for their reactors, which are being reconfigured to never be able to produce weapons-grade plutonium as waste. They won't have a reprocessing facility to try to get weapons-grade plutonium out of the waste anyway, even if they weren't reconfiguring them, which they are. They're closing down the Fordo facility from all nuclear material whatsoever. And they're expanding inspections to the centrifuge facilities, the mines, the processing facility where they take the uranium ore and they turn it into refined yellowcake, and then the facility where they transfer that into uranium hexafluoride gas, which is in fact already under safeguards anyway. They're expanding their inspections regime ridiculously. They'll have 24-hour monitoring and inspection at all of their nuclear facilities. All this crap about spot inspections is about non-nuclear facilities. Imagine any nation in the world allowing a bunch of UN cops to just show up at their military bases and say, we get to look at whatever we want with no notice whatsoever. Well, anyway, in this case, that's the power that they do have. They're to be granted access within 24 hours. That's what the Iranians have agreed to. Now, yes, it's true that worst case scenario, they could drag their feet for up to 24 days, but so what? They couldn't clean up any nuclear material in 24 days or 24 years anyway. I know because Yosef Butt is a nuclear physicist and said so on the show. That was the title of his essay about it. 24 days or 24 years. You're not going to hide uranium. You can't. And anyway, so they will have still zero weapons-grade uranium. They will still have zero weapons-grade plutonium. They will still have zero capability to implode, to miniaturize, to make an implosion nuclear weapon that they could fit on a missile. And they've already, only recently this year, I think, suspended, earlier in the spring, suspended their space program. Whatever three-stage rockets they had that had the ability to go straight up and put one satellite up there, I think they succeeded in one satellite or maybe two, is still a far cry from being able to deliver nuclear weapons that they don't have to the United States of America. Get a globe and look at it. And then, you know, adjust for scale and stuff. But what Dick Cheney is saying here, just like if someone says, stop! You is implied. Right? They don't have time to say you, the subject. They just skip straight to the verb. Stop! And you is understood. The subject is understood, so it's still a complete sentence. Right? You learn that in fourth grade? Third grade, hopefully? Second? Well, here, Dick Cheney is saying, hey, you stupid idiot. Bend over. I'm going to hold you down and screw you. Because you're so stupid, you love it when I put big, stupid lies right in your brain hole. You stupid, pathetic worms, you. Now memorize this. This deal gives Tehran the means to launch a nuclear attack against the United States. You stupid, effing idiots. End quote. And see, all that stuff is, it's kind of just understood in there. You brainless, mindless, conservative idiots for whom facts mean nothing at all. Here's something for you to believe with your faith, retards. What are they going to do? Read a 60-page agreement written in plain English? Come on.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime Future Freedom author Scott McPherson. Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today. All right, y'all. What the... Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. And, yeah, first guest today is Grant Smith, a set that his Skype just dropped, so we'll see if we can get him back here. Oh, Skype, you sound so much better than a phone, but you're so unreliable. You're so unreliable. Well, anyway, CIA releases files about illegal weapons-grade uranium diversions from U.S. to Israel. That's the headline. You can find it today at antiwar.com. CIA cover-up. Oh, you know what? Was it the other? Yesterday. It was yesterday. CIA cover-up thwarted FBI's nuclear diversions investigation. Evidence that missing uranium went to Israel withheld since 1968. And Skype is really screwing us here. You know, like it's Dick Cheney and we're conservative brain holes. Let's see. In the chat room, Bola says, Iran, Syria, tell us about Yemen and Ukraine. Ukraine news coming up, man. I got bad, well, yeah, you know, same old news about Ukraine later in the show. But the Syria thing, yeah, we gotta cover. And I don't know what the hell's going on with Grant. I'll tell you what, I'm gonna play you some audio of something and I'm gonna call him on the phone. And then we'll see what happens there. How about that? God dang thing. Hey, this is a real quote. The only thing that I cut out was Bob Schaefer. This is, I did not, you know, double up on the uhs in here or anything. I swear to God, this is legit.
I have regrets my regret is that a violent group of people have risen up again. This is Al-Qaeda plus.
Isn't that great? That's my favorite George Bush quote now, other than this one.
It's hard work. It's hard work.
Yeah, it's really hard work. All right, well, sorry, here. Let me goddamn find thing to play for you here, man. That's not long enough. And I think, no, that's probably not long enough either. Oh, this is...
Yeah. We'll take a look at the news hostility scoreboard. Find out how we're treating each other around the world. According to the scoreboard, we got 4 civil wars going on right now. 2 brush fire wars, 4 vest pocket wars, 9 wars of liberation, 2 police actions, 16 revolutions, 35 rebellions, 58 border clashes, 21 terrorist bombings, 36 retaliatory raids, 400 guerrilla operations, 95 commando strikes, 612 acts of sabotage, 237 ceasefire violations, 44 surprise attacks, 6 outside aggressions, 6 internal upheavals, 3 protective reaction strikes, 10 counterinsurgencies, 21 violent disturbances, 30 warlike acts, 906 hostile incidents, 10 arms races, 18 deliberate provocations, 61 threats to security, 9 dangerous escalations, 2 military confrontations, 6 heightenings of tension, 14 heated exchanges, 12 belligerent moves, 17 reprisals, 3 powder kegs, 2 tinderboxes, and an ultimatum.
If you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
The point, very simple, was this. We knew the Soviets were already conducting operations in Afghanistan. We knew there was opposition in Afghanistan to the progressive effort which was being made by the Soviets to take over. And we felt, therefore, it made a lot of sense to support those who were resisting. And we decided to do that. This, of course, probably convinced the Soviets even more to do what they were planning to do, which was to try to make a general takeover of the country by force of arms, and got them embroiled in an adventure which proved disastrous for them.
In the same interview, you were asked...
All right,
whether
now that
you
goes on too long. All right, listen, so, yeah, it's the show. I'm not really winning you over with these production values here. I understand that, but it's kind of a one-man band thing. And Skype, you know, it sounds better, but it's so unreliable. I swear, we're about to bring Grant on, and it just dropped him. And then when I tried to call him, Skype didn't tell him that I was trying to call him. So then I had to call him and tell him to call me, and this is what it takes to get a man on the phone because of Skype, because it sucks. You know, Grant, we got to figure out something else, man. I mean, your telephone sounds terrible, too, but at least your telephone usually doesn't just quit on us. Anyway, hi, how are you?
Good, good. I appreciate all your hard work.
Yeah, it's just, hey, you like that? Isn't that great?
Yeah, thanks for getting through.
All right.
Hard work. It's hard work.
It's hard work. Cut the man a break. All right. Hey, listen, everybody. Grant Smith, he wrote a whole bunch of books, and they're all about the Israel lobby breaking America's laws, getting away with blue bloody murder in this country, including stealing our weapons-grade uranium. And he wrote the book on that. Divert is the book on that. But there's 10 of them or something on every aspect of this. And if you go to IRMEP.org, that's the Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy, you'll see that what Grant does is he does the original reporting for you. He's like Leopold, a FOIA ninja. And he sits around forcing the government to cough up documents, proving his case all day, every day. And that website is an absolute treasure trove. You have no idea. So please go and dig through it. IRMEP, IRMEP.org. And for example, he just got a bunch of new CIA files about Israel stealing American highly enriched weapons grade uranium. Is that correct, Grant?
That's correct. Although the parts of it that signal that there was a cover up of the key finding are clear. So I wrote about the cover up. In terms of the actual CIA covert operation conducted by John Haddon, the CIA station chief who was over there during the time period that this happened, that is still redacted in the documents, but we have that from other agency sources, which are linked in the report that appears on antiwar.com called CIA Cover-Up Thwarted FBI's Nuclear Diversion Investigations. So what we do know is that there are thousands of files. They only gave us 130 pages, but there are actually thousands of files as opposed to pages that existed at the FBI, at the CIA, which was investigated by the Justice Department over this issue. And so we've put those out in a couple of releases here. And the antiwar.com article in particular goes into the background of some of the executives who are all Zionist Organization of America executives as well as running this plant, and sort of the history of NUMEC, which was the smuggling front.
All right. Well, you know, I guess I grew up in the era right after Richard Nixon and all that, so the common cliche is that the cover-up is what always gets you in trouble. I mean, meaning government employees. They can do whatever they want, except cover-up from other government employees, because then that gets them, you know, with that ambition, check and ambition thing. That's what gets them in trouble. You know, maybe that's a good place to really take this story and run with it. How dare the CIA thwart the FBI's enforcement of America's laws, Grant?
Well, you know, it's funny because putting something out with a headline CIA covers up something is kind of like almost something that you just breeze over because it's it's like standard operating procedure. I think
except they're not covering up for themselves here, or are they?
No, there's no indication, and this has been a theory that's been put forth by some of the supporters of the theory that the U.S. government wanted Israel to have nuclear weapons and helped it by, you know, putting together a plant that polluted, you know, the environment instead of just taking uranium from the Department of Energy centrifuge sites and giving it to the Israelis. They have this elaborate conspiracy theory that the U.S. government wanted Israel to have nuclear weapons, even though you can see in particular in some of the recent disclosures from the Nixon administration, they certainly didn't want Israel to go nuclear.
All right. Well, hold it right there. That's a perfect place to pick it up on the other side of this break. It's the great Grant F. Smith from IRMEP.org. We'll be right back. Hey, y'all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from MasterSamuraiTech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Grant F. Smith from the Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy, IRMEP.org. And his new piece at antiwar.com is called CIA Covered Up. Nope. CIA Cover Up. I was going to say, that's too many verbs in a row there. CIA cover-up thwarted FBI's nuclear diversion investigations by Grant F. Smith. Yeah, investigations plural. Two different FBI investigations thwarted by the CIA in, about the Israelis stealing weapons-grade uranium from the United States. And where we left off, it was you were addressing the question of whether, in fact, President Johnson ordered the U.S. government, the national security state, to let the Iranians do this. I think I asked you this as a devil's advocate type question on the show one time a couple of years back or so or something that, well, I mean, this is a pretty big operation. Maybe the president said it was okay. After all, talking about Lyndon Johnson, the guy who called the fighter jets back when they were going to try to protect the USS Liberty here after all. So why not? But I think you have a couple of reasons in this article to believe why not, including you say, and you have the file here, the director of the CIA, Richard Helms, in 1968 was the one who requested the FBI investigation in the first place.
Right, right. And there are some weasel words throughout the CIA denials, and there are many denials inside these files that they were in any way operationally involved in assisting a diversion. They deny it, the Directorate of Operations denies it. And you do have this continuing, cover up. I mean, Richard Helms did alert the Attorney General, that they had every reason to believe, and they named the head of this plant, NUMEC, Zalman Shapiro, is the one that needed to be watched. Every reason to believe that a diversion had taken place, but, that information never went to the FBI on order of various Central Intelligence directors, including a former president by the name of George Herbert Walker Bush, but also other CIA directors as well. So, I mean, just to put this in context, it's known, and the Department of Energy touted the fact that they found uranium of a very unique type that was being supplied to NUMEC to make nuclear fuel for the Navy, very, very highly enriched uranium. And they confronted a couple of former agency heads with it, but they never got around, in particular during the second FBI investigation, which was taking place while the statute of limitations was set to run out, never saw fit to tell the investigators about this. And so the investigators were basically, as noted by the CIA, pleading for anything that they could use in their investigation. In particular, they had a dual track investigation going, which was validate the diversion and also figure out who was covering things up. But of course, they were talking to the agency that was covering things up, and they never got that very important evidence. And we know it was important because when the Department of Energy confronted former Atomic Energy Commissioner Glenn Seaborg, who had a very negative role in the entire affair, with this evidence, he then subsequently refused to talk to the FBI about any aspect of the NUMEC affair, as it's known. So, you know, I would analogize it crudely as, hey, I know that Scott Horton's chop shop is the recipient of my 1963 Chevy Corvette. And someone tips off, me to that fact. I call the police and they begin the investigation, but nobody ever says, hey, you know what? The engine block with matching numbers, I saw it in Scott's garage. So, I mean, it's kind of that blatant. I mean, they just never gave, the lantern-jawed FBI gumshoes enough information to do a good job, and they were shaking people down. They were talking to everybody at the end of the 70s to try and get information for an Atomic Energy Act prosecution, but it never happened.
And now, do you have any kind of, or did they ever have a legitimate estimate of how much uranium we're talking about was stolen here?
Yeah, the estimate, even after the plant was demolished and even accounting for higher than normal operating losses, the official Department of Energy figure, which was compiled after painstaking analysis, was 337 kilograms, which is enough to make several nuclear devices. And one of the reasons that the CIA was so sure that a diversion had taken place was that they discovered this weapons-grade uranium in Israel. They knew at the time that Israel didn't have the capability, it didn't have the billion-dollar gaseous diffusion plants to make highly enriched uranium, so they knew it came from somewhere else. And they were, of course, practicing atomic bombing raids with their U.S.-supplied jets, which gave every indication that they, you know, were practicing to use this type of weapon. And so, you know, there's a whole host of evidence that was collected about the fact that they mysteriously had this capability, which the CIA was primarily interested in documenting for their national intelligence estimate. And as they repeated throughout the CIA documents that were released, they weren't in the law enforcement business.
Right. Yeah, they're in the law-breaking business.
Well, yeah, to a certain extent, that's their job overseas, is to recruit people and do things that violate the sovereignty of other countries. So I think that more than anything, this particular release, to some extent, puts to rest the idea that the U.S. government wanted a diversion to take place. And, of course, NUMEC is always in the news, and it's not in the news for this, which was, why was it ever built? You know, why was the plant built, a shoddy steel mill converted into a nuclear reprocessing plant? It's in the news because there's a $500 million cleanup that U.S. taxpayers are going to have to pay for. And basically, as John Haddon of the CIA publicly stated, he was the former CIA station chief, that this was an Israeli job from the beginning. This was just another smuggling front, of which there have been many, that was put together for the purpose of getting weapons-grade uranium to Israel. It's left behind a huge mess. And again, U.S. taxpayers, through the Army Corps of Engineers, are going to have to pay for the cleanup, even as the government fights tooth and nail, even since 1968, to prohibit Americans from knowing what really happens to this missing uranium.
Yeah. Well, and I guess this doesn't that go back to Lyndon Johnson, where, come on, the Israeli government has a plot to go into the nuclear reprocessing business in Pennsylvania so that they can steal a bunch of weapons-grade uranium, and all from right under the nose of Uncle Sam without the national security state knowing enough about it to do anything about it the whole time? It sounds crazy.
It sounds crazy. Here's what's known for sure. David Lowenthal, who set up the plant, was a smuggler during Israel's War of Independence. He had close contact and known to the FBI eventually that, you know, he had high Israeli intelligence agency contacts. They obviously needed to convert the hexafluoride gas, which came in big canisters, into something more transportable, which was, you know, something NUMEC did, and then stuffed canisters of that into irradiators that then went to Israel. And there's an eyewitness account from 1981 of a former employee saying that's exactly what happened. Whether Johnson knew about it or not, we know Johnson was, you know, in the pocket of many Israel lobbyists like Abraham Feinberg, you know, receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash. Yeah, he didn't allow any sort of response to the Liberty, but the people in the CIA who would have known about a finding, again, you know, they're in the business of covering things up, but they do say to all these Congress people and other investigators, no, we had nothing to do with any operation. So you know, there are other smuggling fronts, MarTech, the Sonnenborn Institute, Materials for Palestine, all organizations that were set up decades earlier that were designed and, in fact, did funnel conventional weapons to Israel right under the nose of authorities. And there was no presidential authorization of that either. In fact, they were found to be violating the Arms Export Control Act, and several people were even prosecuted.
Yeah, you don't need the CIA to be behind it. You just need the FBI to be in charge of stopping it. That's, there you go.
Well, yeah, but in this case, you know, the FBI did arrest some people, and some prosecutions were made in the convention smuggling. Here, everyone who would have been threatened by the information, it seems, had access to it, but the ones who could have done anything about it prosecutorially were denied it.
Yep. All right, check him out, Grant Smith at antiwar.com. CIA cover-up thwarted, FBI's nuclear diversion investigations. Thanks.
Thanks.
You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com.
All right, y'all. Welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Sorry about the background noise. Well, if you're wearing headphones, I don't know. If you're not wearing headphones, maybe you can't hear it, but there are... that sounds like a jigsaw. There are jigsaws and skill saws and hammers and things happening next door. But that's all right, because that place was a dump. So, yeah, if they fix it up a little bit, it's all right. As long as my rent doesn't go up for it. All right. Yeah, man. So, Dan Sanchez just sent me this link, a new article by him at the Anti-Media, theantimedia.org. It's called Read This Before the Media Uses a Drowned Refugee Boy to Start Another War. Thanks, Dan. A little bit of context for you. You know, they always truncate the antecedents. So TV says, look, refugees, what should be done about them? But they don't explain why it's this way. And of course, the answer is because of America. The answer is because of George Bush's war in Iraq and because of Barack Obama's wars in Libya and especially in Syria. That's why. And the little boy drowned on the beach is a Kurd who had to flee from Kobani, which was, you know, virtually destroyed in the war with the Islamic State. The Islamic State that is really just Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Just like al-Nusra, it's just one faction of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And as we've documented on this show the whole time, that's one advantage of me being old and having been doing this for, you know, daily for 10 years straight now, is that we covered all this stuff at the time and all along. From the very, very beginning, it was clear that, I think The Observer was first to report that Prince Bandar is sending Mujahideen off to fight in Syria. Very quickly after that, Eric Margulies reported that French sources told him that they had special forces and spies on the ground there, which, what is, come on. What is France other than a sock puppet satellite of the American Empire in NATO? They weren't doing that without coordinating with the Americans. That was right off the bat. I forget the other right away, you know, early 2011 sources about CIA. I know there were one or two, but certainly by December of 2011, there were two pieces by Philip Giraldi, former CIA officer Philip Giraldi, one at the American Conservative magazine called NATO versus Syria, and one at antiwar.com. The better one is at antiwar.com. It's called Washington's Secret Wars. And in that article, he says there's a brand new finding signed by Barack Obama authorizing covert action in Syria to work to undermine Assad. And meaning in favor of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. I mean, I'll play it a million times over again, but it's just perfect. And it's got, you don't have to be unfair with the context. You don't have to take it out of context at all to get all out of it that you need.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria? Hamas is now supporting the opposition. Are we supporting Hamas in Syria? So I think, Wyatt, you know, despite the great pleas that we hear from those people who are being ruthlessly assaulted by Assad, if you're a military planner or if you're a secretary of state and you're trying to figure out, do you have the elements of an opposition that is actually viable, we don't see that.
Right. So there's no need to twist those words whatsoever. She's, the way she asked that rhetorical question, she isn't saying, yes, the CIA is handing guns directly to Al-Qaeda guys right now. That's not what she's saying. She's saying, well, look, if we're helping to undermine Assad and we're helping to support a rebellion that has been endorsed by Al-Qaeda, are we not then helping Al-Qaeda? Are we not, in effect, supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria? Now, I haven't heard of any actual Hamas fighters in Syria at all. The fact that they, you know, said some words about it, whatever. That's besides the point. But the part about Zawahiri is extremely relevant because, of course, Golani, the leader of the al-Nusra Front, is still sworn loyal to him. So are his guys. They're basically the core of the leadership of al-Nusra are the Syrian veterans of al-Qaeda in Iraq. And the only difference between them and the Islamic State is different leadership. That's it. Same group. They split. And one day they'll probably come back together again. But anyway, so all that just to explain the context that, yes, America has been backing the Mujahideen. Our allies, the Turks and the Saudis and the Qataris and the Kuwaitis, have been sending millions of dollars and tons of guns. You can read about it in the New York Times and the Washington Post. Have admitted it back in 2012. There's, of course, the famous DIA report that you can read about at LevantReport.com, and Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, who conceded and confirmed the very worst interpretation of the DIA document to Al Jazeera, that, yeah, here's the White House being warned in August of 2012 that they're creating the grounds for the rise of an Islamic State, not the Islamic State, but an Islamic State in eastern Syria and dangerously perhaps even western Iraq, where the Shiite-controlled government in Baghdad has so little authority. This is the fire we're playing with. And they went ahead and did it anyway. It's all right there. And then, so now that the refugee crisis is so bad and is affecting Europe so bad, and most of these refugees were in Turkey, so why is Turkey pushing them all out into Europe? I don't know if anybody's written a whole lot about this, but these people aren't all fleeing Syria and Iraq right now. A lot of them are Iraqi refugees living in Syria who are finally leaving there, but or have left in the months and even years past, have been living in Turkey. Looks like the Turks are kicking everybody out to try to create a crisis for the Europeans in order to force their hand to make them actually go ahead and follow through and get rid of Assad. I don't know. But on the other side of this, and here's where the absurdity really kicks in, man, is this guy Michael Weiss. He's the anti-Russia hawk at the Daily Beast, and his reporting is not trustworthy, although sometimes he admits it and says, you know, I don't really have any evidence for this, but I heard, you know, and this kind of crap. So whatever, you know, at least he's honest about what a liar he is some of the time. And I've read him do stuff of substance before as well that didn't seem to be lies to me. I don't know. But this one is exposing Russia's secret army in Syria. And I don't know whether it's true or not, but take it at face value that Russian special forces have been infiltrating into Syria lately, just for the sake of argument. So, we're supposed to be scandalized that the Russians are helping to prop up the secular government run by the guy with the clean-shaven chin and the three-piece suit, who's supported by the majority of Sunnis, all the Shia, the Kurds, the Druze, and all the different factions of Christians, along with the Alawites, who is, you know, the core base of the leadership of the Ba'ath Party there. We're supposed to be upset that Russia is helping to back that secular coalition government and army against Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State. And you read this article, and you're just supposed to believe this guy's pretended assertion that there are non-Islamist rebels who are fighting against Assad here. He doesn't prove it. He doesn't identify them. He just pretends they exist for the sake of his own argument. And then says, oh no, the Russians are going to be fighting against them too. And now listen, again, I've been covering this for 4 years straight on this show. I've been asking rhetorically, what are you going to do if your regime changed the regime in Damascus for 10 years, for 5 years before this war even broke out? Or whatever, however many years, 6 years. Now, 4 years into it, I've been covering it this whole time. I've never said the U.S. should back Assad. I never said NATO should back Assad. What I've said is, what in the hell are we doing backing the Mujahideen against him? That is madness. That is treason. When this isn't the mistake of the 1980s, oops, this could blow back. We know who these guys are already. They've killed our people already. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, y'all, welcome back. Reza Meraji's coming up on the show. We're going to talk about this Iran deal. It's not quite over yet. The Israelis aren't letting up. They're going to do everything they can. Their fifth column in America is going to do everything they can still to try to intervene. As Jim Loeb described, they're going to pass new resolutions and new sanctions on old issues and just do everything they can to try to force the Iranians out of the deal. So, we'll see what happens with that. Reza Meraji's going to have some things to say to you. So here, let me just try to get through these things quickly here. Again, I want to remind you tonight, Eye on the Empire with myself and Jeff Tucker at liberty.me. So, you like my voice and you want to see what my handsome face looks like, huh? Tonight, Eye on the Empire at liberty.me. We'll be covering the wars and things. And again, I want to point you to scotthorton.org/donate, the brand new deal with Listen and Think Audio. Anybody who donates $200 to this show gets a lifetime subscription to all the libertarian audiobooks. Well, all the audiobooks, I think they're all libertarian ones. There may be some extras too. But anyway, you get all their audiobooks that they've ever done or ever will do for free from now on for a $200 donation to the Scott Horton Show. So that's got to be worth it, man, if you're an audiobook guy or gal. All right, good. And then, there's so much to talk about. I'm not sure which order to take it all in, but I guess I want to talk about Charles Burris. Charles Burris is my favorite blogger. At LouRockwell.com. He writes articles from time to time as well. But he's a very interesting guy. And I guess,
So, anyway, there's so many different things to say about all this, and I'm not sure how much I have time for. Who rules America? Power elite analysis and American history. So here's what I got to say, especially to you left-wingers. Right-wingers, I don't know if you people can read at all. If you can, then what are you doing being a conservative? That doesn't make any sense. But anyway, I don't know. Especially for you liberals, what you should understand about libertarians is, oh, we're pro-market, but that doesn't mean that we favor businessmen in particular or any particular businessmen at all, or what they're up to or the way they operate or any other thing. If they commit forced theft or fraud, then let the consequences hit them. We're not in favor of businesses regulating themselves. We're in favor of business being regulated by the marketplace, which is an entirely different thing. And so what you'll find is that because of the libertarian perspective on what's a legitimate business and what's not one, being one tied to the government in any way, one benefiting from socializing its costs onto the rest of the people through state power, they all fall on the side that we're against. They're against us. They're our enemies, and we're theirs. And so what happens is you get things like Murray Rothbard's Wall Street, Banks, and American Foreign Policy, which the first time I read it, read to me like, wow, it's actually a brilliant and libertarian, not right-wing. See, I shouldn't have smeared all the right-wingers. Right-wingers are kind of good on this stuff. The populist right-wingers can be sometimes. But it's not a right-winger. It's Murray Rothbard writing about basically the history of the Morgan and then Rockefeller banking interests rule over the United States in the 20th century. And I love that stuff, but I always just read it from the Birchers and had to kind of weed out all the kooky stuff and all the right-wing stuff. But here's Murray Rothbard explaining it and getting it way better than Ed Griffin ever got it. Way better. Wall Street, Banks, and American Foreign Policy by Murray Rothbard. You can read the whole thing at LouRockwell.com and Mises.org and a lot of other places. Wall Street, Banks, and American Foreign Policy. And that's kind of a taste of what I'm talking about. And so the point being is this. What I'm trying to get to is this. It's not kooky conspiracy theory stuff. It's badass conspiracy theory stuff. It's the revisionist history of the United States of America in the 20th century. And the rise of the empire, by just looking at who the vested interests are in a way that conservatives and liberals are, you know, somewhat prohibited from because they're in on it to a certain degree, right? I mean, the new right is the military industrial complex side of the argument. So they can oppose the old Eastern establishment all they want, but all they want to do is replace them. And we don't want neither of those. So anyway, I think that's the best kind of education that you can get on these kinds of issues is from libertarians like Murray Rothbard, and Wall Street, Banks, and American Foreign Policy. If you've never read that, that would be one hell of a great introduction, and you'll see just what I mean. And which brings me to Charles Burris, because Charles Burris is, the kind of guy, and there are a few of these, I think, who, is a serious-ass revisionist from these questions, which banks influence which political parties the most and got us into which wars and for what reasons? These kinds of questions and well told, very seriously told. This isn't, some Ezra Pound anti-Semitic, ridiculousness or whatever. This is it's good stuff. Very good stuff. Who Rules America? Power Elite Analysis and American History by Charles A. Burris. And you can find him on the blog at LouRockwell.com all the time. And the thing is this guy's a real history teacher, professor. I forget if he's a professor or teaches high school or something. But he's a serious-ass historian. And just in this article here, he links to so much good stuff. It's like an outline here. Who Rules America? And everything that he would have you read about it. And it's just, scores and scores and scores of great books that you wish you'd ever heard of or got a chance to read before. And there you go. So I just like that stuff. And I guess, see, my problem is this, man, is I was finally smart enough, I was old enough to not really be a kook anymore
right at the time that the neocons wrestled the power away, or finished wrestling the power away from the old Eastern establishment I've been studying for so long. So, and they did it without any regard whatsoever to building up the United Nations and that kind of thing that I always thought was the core purpose of American foreign policy, to make NATO the, you know, white army of the North in alliance with Russia as the one world army of the United Nations and all that great Bircher crap. I thought they may be right wing, but they're right about that part. But nah, they weren't. So, but the thing of it is this, just because the Birchers mix their Illuminati and United Nations conspiracy theory stuff with this kind of power elite analysis doesn't mean that all of the power elite analysis is corrupt, just some of their conclusions about what the power elite were actually up to. And how certain it is that it's always the same people who never get regime changed. That's the part that, you know. Yeah, that, yeah. The boardroom part is right. The secret magic cult part is not. Anyway, Charles Burris, I think, could recommend just some great reading. Who Rules America? Power Elite Analysis and American History. And it's all the stuff I wish I had had access to when I was young and stuck reading The New American. And the best thing in The New American was Will Grigg. And he's gone from there now, thank goodness for that. And I didn't even get to talk about the police state stuff. Or Ukraine. Oh, man, Ukraine. Well, I'll try to keep the Reza Marashi interview short so I can cover Ukrainian Nazis for you. That's pretty important. I meant to say that in the last segment.
I love Bitcoin, but there's just something incredibly satisfying about having real, fine silver in your pocket. That's why commodity discs are so neat. They're 1 ounce rounds of fine silver with a QR code on the back. Just grab your smartphone's QR reader, scan the coin, and you'll instantly get the silver spot price in Federal Reserve notes and Bitcoin. And if you donate $100 to the Scott Horton Show, he'll send you one. Learn more at facebook.com/commoditydiscs. Commoditydiscs.com.
Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. Well, Reza wasn't ready. That's all right. We'll call him back in a minute. That gives us time to talk about this one from the Jewish Daily Forward today, forward.com. Ukraine nationalists destroy Hasidic pilgrimage tent city. And by nationalists, they mean Hitler-loving Nazis. The Svoboda Party. Oh, no, no. They're not national socialists. They're social nationalists. I need a ba-dum-tsh here on my jingles list. They're social nationalists, see? And all they want is social nationalism. And so when the Hasidic community there built this tent city to welcome, I guess, Jews from all over the place. I don't know if they're Israelis or whoever, are coming for a pilgrimage over, I'm not sure what. Oh, I love that quote at the end. I'll have to get that back to that in a second. Since the fall of communism, Uman has seen the arrival of thousands of pilgrims on the Jewish New Year who come to visit the grave site of Breslover. Breslover? I don't know. Oh, that's a movement. Breslovers, the Breslover movement's founder, Rabbi Nachman. Okay, so that's why they're making a pilgrimage. They're going to the grave of Rabbi Nachman. That's why they're there. So the local Hasidic community built a tent city, and then on the Sabbath day, when they're not allowed to do anything about it, the local Nazi stormtroopers came by, and apparently they didn't split anybody's skull open, thank goodness, but they came and destroyed the whole tent city thing. And it's the Svoboda Party. Kershom says the current mayor of Uman was appointed by members of the nationalist Svoboda, John McCain, and Hitler-loving Nazi Party. Following the revolution, they mean the coup d'etat in Kiev. There is a crazy state of anarchy here, he says, by which he means government lawlessness, of course. Them and their toughs. The right-wing activists were seeking to harass the Hasids in order to gain political points among the local public. Kirschbaum asserted, whoever harasses the Hasidim more has a better chance of winning the elections in October, he said. Oh, well, see there, it's all okay because it's a democracy and they're going to have some elections. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes there's a coup when the wrong guy wins the election, but then other times they have elections that when people vote the right way, then the results are acknowledged. So that's important. And the fact that it was the American neocon movement, neoconservative Israel First movement, which is not entirely Jewish, but somewhat, that they're the ones behind this is just sort of the icing on the cake, right? Robert Kagan, the author, the co-author with Bill Kristol of Toward a Neo-Reaganite Foreign Policy in 1996. Founding member of PNAC and all of the rest of it. And it's his wife, Victoria Nuland, is the one who did the coup here. And helped arrange this coup and put these Nazis in power. And, you know, there's a Raimondo article at antiwar.com. Let me find it for you here. It's just a couple of articles back where he talks about a real problem with the where is it? Man, is it that far back? About the right sector and Svoboda, you know, street thugs and these giant protests that they've been having and their threat to overthrow the government there in Kiev. Here it is. It's from July 30th. I didn't realize it was that old ago. Anyway, still, Monsters of Ukraine, Made in the USA. That's the article at antiwar.com/Justin. You'll have to go back. It's July 31st, 2015. Monsters of Ukraine, Made in the USA. Fascists proliferate as the country slides into a sinkhole. And it's about how, hey, you know, our side used these Nazis to overthrow the government and to wage the anti-terrorist campaign against the, you know, whatever, the precincts, I guess, the statelets in the East who refuse to recognize the legitimacy of the coup government to fight them all this time. And there was a quote, I guess 3 or 4 months ago from one of the leaders of right sector, Dmitry Yurash, who said, hey, we overthrew the government in Kiev. No, not that there was a coup or anything. Yeah, we overthrew the government in Kiev, so you think we couldn't do that again against the government now? And he's a member of parliament. For God's sake. Anyway, so yeah, man, read up Barack Obama's government supporting Nazis. Hey, when they say that the U.S. Special Forces and Rangers and whoever are over there training the Ukrainian National Guard, who do you think that is? That's the Azov Battalion and the right sector, the Svoboda Party, nationalists. It's a very polite way of saying Nazis, Hitler-loving Nazis with SS lightning bolts and 88s and 14s and Confederate flags even. That's a nice touch. And anyway, so, yeah, there you go. America messing around. Supporting Nazis in a government who couldn't possibly win in the fight that they seek against Russia. And they're whisking. They are risking all of our lives with this. And I don't mean to be too alarmist about it, but you know, when the line was halfway across Germany, you could see why, you know, the Russians already control half of Germany. Really going to have a nuclear war just to get control of the other half of it? You know. But you think the Russians won't fight over Ukraine? You're crazy. That's like saying America wouldn't fight over who rules Canada. If the Russians came in and supported a bunch of Hitler-loving Nazis in a coup d'etat in Ottawa. Isn't that the capital? It doesn't matter, so I don't think about it very often. Right, yeah, America would not tolerate that one bit. And that's what's going on here. And there you go, you know, in the forward today. You know, they haven't really, so far, before this, I don't think they've done much against local Jews. We haven't seen much of that. I think they're worried about the public relations in the West. They need American tax dollars, the ones taken right out of your paycheck every week. They need that money to keep coming. And they can be Nazis. I guess the Americans don't mind. But if they actually start picking on Jews, that might become a problem. And so maybe here now they've pushed it a little too far. They didn't hurt anybody, apparently, in this one. They just destroyed this tent city that had been built for the purposes of this pilgrimage by these Hasidic Jews. But still, for Rosh Hashanah. Can you imagine if something like that happened in the United States? Or if, I don't know, some Palestinians somehow climbed over the wall and knocked down an Israeli tent on the West Bank in occupied territory. Screaming blue bloody murder. All right, back in a minute.
Hey, all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Again, sorry about the construction next door. You might hear some hammer banging, but I'll try to keep my mic off while Reza's talking. Reza Marashi, that is, from the National Iranian American Council. That's NIAcouncil.org. Thanks for coming back on, Reza, today. Reza, how are you? Oh, I hit the wrong dang button for the Skype instead of the phone. Now how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Good. Very happy to have you here. So, first of all, let me just say there's an Iran deal and the Republicans are trying to pass a resolution in both houses against it. And the question was, will they be able to override the president's veto once he vetoes it? And now the question is no longer that. Now the question is, will the Democrats be able to actually filibuster the negative resolution in the Senate and prevent it from even going to Obama's desk to get vetoed in the first place? And there have been some recent announcements as of this morning. Can you please let us know what's the whip count and what's the deal?
Yeah, I mean, the president needed 41 Democratic senators in an effort to try and prevent him having to even use his veto. So he won that fight today, but the game isn't over because now we have a situation where...
Well, wait, stop right there. On that fight, I had heard, actually it was from Jim Loeb, and I'm sorry, I don't know the names of the senators, so I don't make a very compelling case, but Jim Loeb's a very smart guy, and he's paying very close attention, as I'm sure you're well aware, and he was saying that there are two senators who had said that they will not vote for the anti-resolution and will vote against it, but they would not support a filibuster against it. So that raises the question of whether, in fact, we're back down to 40 or even 39 rather than 41. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, therein lies the issue and therein lies the challenge. I think the president is, and the White House and folks who are in the pro-deal camp are understanding that the fight isn't over precisely because you need to ensure that you have enough members of Congress more generally, but also in the Senate more specifically to ensure that the filibuster process can move forward. And this is the open question because on the one hand, you know, you've had Mitch McConnell, who's on the Republican side in the Senate, saying consistently that, you know, you have to pass the 60-vote threshold, you have to pass the 60-vote threshold. And to change the rules that he's been trying to put forward now, I think, would be, you know, overtly political and frankly, quite silly. And guarantee as of yet because it's still fluid. So we're going to find out in relatively short order how this thing is going to move forward. I mean, Democratic senators can't have it both ways. Voting for cloture on the resolution of disapproval is essentially a vote to undermine diplomacy. And waffling on the cloture vote puts overwhelming pressure on other senators to declare that they support the deal and vote against cloture. So, you know, the filibuster process is still fluid. You know, even Susan Collins down in Maine, I think, hasn't declared her position yet. So we've got a ways to go before the whole process is over, and not just because of the filibuster process, but also because there is a long-standing effort, not just about whether the president can win the battle to protect the deal, but how he wins it. And I think it's the how he wins it is particularly important, not just because this is an issue of legacy for the president, but also its ability to survive past his time in office. I mean, if this deal limps across the finish line and is only protected by President Obama's veto pen, then the question of sustaining the deal becomes a question of who's holding that pen. Will the next president continue issuing the sanctions waivers that are necessary to implement the deal, the kinds of waivers that the United States has agreed to? Or will they hold lawmakers back and hold interest groups back from calling for new sanctions or other provocative moves that could, you know, violate the terms that America has agreed to? So I think I'll stop rambling. This is shaping up to be exactly the same kind of fight that we saw on Obamacare, where rather than, you know, death by a shotgun, they're going to try to kill it death by a million paper cuts. You know, their playbook is small, the people that are fighting against this, but it's a well-funded playbook, so the fight continues.
All right. Now, I think we've beat the details of the nuclear deal, what it really means to death on this show. But I have a couple of questions here in the email that I thought were pretty good questions that I'd like to put to you. And I know you're formerly at the State Department working on the Iran desk there, so I'm sure you're able to speak to some of these questions pretty easily. Other than with North Korea, how many, if any, joint committee type agreements like this have there been with other nations along the lines of the Iran deal? Anything else you could compare it to?
I think it's incomparable because, again, the North Korea deal did not go into nearly as much detail as the Iran deal goes into. The North Korea deal was just a couple of pages long. The Iran deal is, if I'm not mistaken, 159, 158 pages long. So they've really gone into the weeds, frankly, in an unprecedented kind of way. And I think that speaks to a larger point that kind of engulfs the question that was asked, which is, this is the most robust, intrusive, wide-ranging non-proliferation agreement ever negotiated. And it's going to be used as a model for future non-proliferation agreements going forward, precisely because the Iranian government, in an effort to, you know, try and show the world that it's not building a nuclear weapon and doesn't seek to, has agreed to measures that no other country has ever agreed to before.
All right, now, when it comes to the permanent kind of 24-hour inspection of all the declared nuclear facilities, how different is that to the regular safeguards agreement that every other non-nuclear weapons state but nuclear state is party to? They all have safeguards agreements of one level or another, right?
That's right. But, I mean, that's for countries that have signed the non-proliferation treaty.
Right.
They all have safeguards agreements. But for all intents and purposes, you have the additional protocol, which goes above and beyond your typical safeguards agreement. Because, again, Iran was following through from one IAEA report to the next. The IAEA said, we can't confirm certain things, but it didn't say that Iran was in violation of its IAEA commitments. And I think that's an important distinction, because now Iran is going to sign on to the additional protocol and is going to go above and beyond what most member states that have signed on to the NPT are going to be required to go forward with. But also they've agreed to inspections and verification mechanisms that go even beyond the additional protocol. So, again, this is the most intrusive and most rigorous inspections mechanism and verifications mechanism ever put into place. The entire supply and production chain of Iran's nuclear program is under constant monitoring. It's never happened before. So, again, people can talk about whether or not they trust Iran, whether or not they like Iran, whether or not they like diplomacy. What they can't argue is that this is the most intrusive, well-negotiated non-proliferation agreement ever.
All right. Now, we know that there's you know, just all this robust inspection at all their declared nuclear facilities, et cetera. And we know that when the War Party complains about a potential 24-day delay on an inspection at their undeclared facilities, say a military facility where Iran has up until that point never said that there is anything nuclear going on whatsoever. But if that's a so-called suspicious site and the Americans or the safeguards inspectors want to check it out, they have 24 days. And we know that, come on, they're totally BSing when they try to make it seem like in the headlines that Iran has 24 days notice on any inspection anywhere. Well, we can obviously put that aside because that's silly. We're only talking about if they show up to a military base and say, we want to look here, there, the other place. But I wonder how that compares to any other safeguards agreement on Earth. Does the IAEA get to, have they ever had the ability to go to military bases in 24 days or any number of days?
I mean, the ability to go to military sites is predicated on the ability of the IAEA or IAEA member states to demonstrate that they have just cause to go to military sites. It has to be, you can't say, we suspect that you have, you know, you're building a nuclear weapon at this military site. And then they say, you're Iran or any other country, you're going to say, well, what grounds do you have to think that? Show us the evidence. And then you say, well, we're not going to show you the evidence because that will reveal how we collect intelligence on your nuclear program. Then you're at a stalemate. So there's going to be a demonstration of why a particular site may want to be inspected. And if one happens to be a military site, then that's they're going to have to cross that bridge when they get to it. But it's going to be predicated on the evidence that's put forward, and it's going to be need-based when it comes to military sites. Because, again...
And what about the Brazilians, the Canadians, the... Well, I don't want to include France or any other nuclear weapons state, but what about, I don't know, Spain? They have nuclear technology, but not a nuclear weapons program, right? Does the IAEA have the right to inspect their military base, assuming that they provide some reason to believe there's something to find there in any other country other than Iran?
No, it's not a right. It doesn't matter if it's Iran or any other country. The IAEA doesn't have the right.
Well, I mean, under this deal, they do now, right, is what we're talking about.
Yeah, and I don't think they feel they do
the
now.
Authority,
and it has to be substantiated by evidence.
Right. But I'm just saying, in any other, I mean, under this deal with Iran, they can get into Parchin, assuming they have a legitimate reason to believe so within the 24 days, whatever. I just wonder if that is parallel to any other safeguards agreement on Earth, where they could ever, you know, obviously America would never let them into American military bases, right?
No, of course not. But the issue with Parchin is not what's happening there now. It's what's potentially happened in the past. And the Iranians understand that they need to answer questions about what happened in the past with regards to the nuclear program, particularly from 2003 prior. And they've set up a 12-step process with the IAEA with timelines attached to address all of those questions and resolve the issue once and for all. And once the issue has been closed, it can't be reopened again. And I think that was another thing that was potentially a cause for concern on the part of the Iranians, as it would for any other country, which is to say, you know, where does this process end? Let's map it out so we know everything that needs to be done. It can't be open-ended. And now they've ironed that out so that for past activities, for present activities, all of Iran's facilities are known, and the entire production and supply chain is going to be monitored. Most of it already is. So for all intents and purposes, we're good on that front. And in order to cheat, after this deal begins being implemented, Iran would have to set up an entire parallel nuclear industry and infrastructure, which has never been done in the history of the world. So we're really looking at a deal that is going to ensure that Iran can't build a nuclear weapon without getting caught cheating.
Yeah. Hey, just one last note here before I let you go. Did you see where Dick Cheney said yesterday that this deal, well, here, let me get the quote right. If I have it here. Cheney, this deal gives Tehran the means to launch a nuclear attack on the U.S. homeland. And I just thought, that is so cool that that's what they're reduced to now, is not just these complete inanities that have no basis in reality whatsoever, but go ahead and have Dick Cheney come out and do it. It's almost like a false flag attack by Code Pink or some kind of peace activist group mind controlling Dick Cheney. Every time we need for him to completely and totally decimate and discredit, finish discrediting the war party's point of view. They trot him on out with another one of these things.
Well, at least with Dick Cheney, you know where you stand.
All right. Hey, thanks again, Rez. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
See ya.